Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, tomorrow is the will be the first day of the new class, new course, Getting to the Roots 201, and I'm going to give a little bit of some tidbits about the course, and get into understanding the power words, the power etymology, and how words have been reshaped, constructed meanings have been developed, redefinition of words have been developed to reshape people's minds, to control them, to lead them into a way, you know, away from well-settled principles, away from well-settled culture norms and practices, so they can be controlled and be used as commodities,
mm-hmm.
as machines or producers of laborers. So the reconstruction of words is what I'll get into, and the motive behind the reconstruction of words, or the reconstructive of meanings. And we're gonna look at that in this class. It's important that we teach people how to think. I recall when I was back in college and I was taking an economics class, and I had my Albion professor, and I recall him saying that, you know, I want to teach you how to think. I also, another Professor Applebaum, who was my junior year, my philosophy professor, and he was one of my better professors, because he challenged us how to think. He really did, and that's really important. And so the students have been molded to think in a certain way, not to how to analyze, you know, not how to, you know, formulate and how things are constructed. See, because it's all about the words, about meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna actually see that. We're actually going to see that tonight. And I'm going to actually go through one of the words. Yes, Sister Beverly.
Yeah, and I know sometimes they call this language we talk to, they call it babble. You know, we're babbling and really not saying nothing. Usually when we say we babbling. And so that's true. They call spelling spells. You know, they put spells through the words. The words are very powerful and they vibration.
We're actually going to get into some of that, and particularly the constructive meanings and how they are done to lead people, to control people's minds, to control generations of people.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm going to actually demonstrate that. When you look at constructing a false setting about ancient society, you have ancient civilization is based in matrilineal and matriarchal principles. Matrilineal means that titles, land, and wealth passed down to the mother line of the family. Then you have the matriarchal means that societies where women rule. So this has been suppressed. Most women throughout the world not aware of these ancient societies, ancient civilization principles. We have been constructed to see these deities, male deities. That's not ancient. You know, that this male bound down to male deities, male statues. And this is worldwide. How did that come about? How is constructing a false setting about ancient civilization, how does that come about? Now, in the book, The Great Cosmic Mother, the chapter titled Goddess of the Witches, Rediscovering the Great Cosmic Mother, Rediscovering the Religion of the Earth by Monica Soong and Barbara Moore, they write, the morning star, or the evening star, is Venus, which along with the moon was observed with very accurate calculations by ancient astronomers worldwide. To the Aztecs, it was Quetzalcoatl. To the Mayans, Calcucan. To the Sumerians and Babylonians, it was Inanna, Ishtar. When the Christians encountered astronomical astrological observations and the texts on Venus and the moon, they saw only, quote-unquote, devil worship. Hence, they destroyed library after library containing ancient wisdom and knowledge. including the Mayan Astronomical Library at Mani, as well as the Library of Alexandria. Mayan astronomical knowledge was probably the most advanced in the ancient world. In 1552, the Spanish friar Diego de Landa, confronting all these texts containing Mayan intellectual brilliance as well as spiritual data, stated that they contained nothing in which there was not to be seen superstitions and lies on the devil, and so we burned them all. Early Christian smashing of Dionysic cults in the Mediterranean, as well as later church persecution of witches in Europe, must be seen in this global context. Whenever Christians saw knowledge, herbal, medical, astronomical, symbolical, they saw demonism and moved to destroy it. The witch persecutions were not simply aimed at quote-unquote devil worshippers, but at ancient human knowledge of the world. Ancient human knowledge of the world. And I wanted to read this, Sister Bev, to set the tone
okay.
of the motive, the definition of the development of constructive meanings. What is the motive? These linguists have that words evolve because society evolves. You know, society evolves, and so therefore you have to, you know, you have to have changed meaning to adapt to the development of technology and the development of the society. That's how, that's language like that. And so those who, the minds are being shaped, go to school to become linguists, you know, they're 22, 23 years old, and their minds are being molded that way. That words simply evolve, you know, meanings evolve. Do they analyze that? Do meanings evolve? Read that part. Persecutions were not simply aimed at quote-unquote devil worshippers, but at ancient human knowledge of the world. Or is constructive meanings developed to what? Bury, to suppress ancient human knowledge of the world. How would one come to draw that conclusion? The etymology, the history, origin, true meaning of words, gives you insight. Once you understand the origin and true meaning of a word or words, in that you gain knowledge.
Your phone is going in and out. We can't hear you.
Let me take this off. What about now?
Okay, we can hear you.
I just took the beats off. Yes, I meant to take those off. Yes. So as I was saying, the power of the true meaning of words. And what do the true meaning of words lead one to know, come to know? Ancient human knowledge. Ancient world culture. When you're looking at a word, then what it gives you is this, its knowledge, its setting in the bin, how a people operate every day, how they interchange with one another, what their lives and how they live, their dress and their you know, how they communicate and what knowledge base they had about the stars. And knowledge based on astronomy and their technology. And so you begin to, that is the, in the true meaning of words. So when words are, meanings are reconstructed, this is what's being buried. Ancient human knowledge is being buried through the reconstruction and also the reconstruction forms of words. This is very important. This is what we'll be getting across in the class. Learning how to think about words and the motives of reconstructed meaning. Further analyze this. Sister Bev, you have a question before I go on?
No, go ahead.
Let's further analyze in the book, The Dumbing Down of America. The Dumbing Down of America, written by Charlotte Thompson Isabit. She writes, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, William Vuillaume Booth, and John Dewey and others, and their total departure from the traditional definition of education, like the one given in the New Century Dictionary of the English Language, 1927, Appleton Century Croft, New York, 1927, the original meaning of education in this 1927 dictionary. The drawing out of a person's innate talents and abilities by imparting the knowledge of languages, scientific reasoning, history, literature, rhetoric, etc., the channels through which those abilities would flourish and serve. The etymology of education, ed, e means from, out, from and out of, duku, which means I lead out. Then we have, it's a bit further writes, a quantum leap was taken from the above definition to the new dehumanizing definition used by the experimental psychologist found in an online of educational psychology as Barnes & Noble, New York, 1934, revised edition by Rudolf Peitner and others. The redefinition of education. Learning is the result of the modifiability in the paths of neural conduction. Explanations of even such forms of learning as abstractions and generalizations demand on the neurons only growth, excitability, conductivity, and modifiability. The mind is the connection system of man, and learning is the process of connecting. The situation response formula is adequate to cover learning of any sort, and the really influential factors in learning are readiness of the neurons, sequence in time, belongingness, and satisfying consequences. Let's look at that. Modifiability. What does modifiability mean? When you're modifying a situation, modifying a thing, what are you doing? You're changing. Why do the neurons need to be modified? The explanation, even such forms of learning as abstraction and generalization demand on the neurons only growth, excitability, conductivity, modifiability. Let's go to the definition. Let's go back to the definition 1927, the new Century Dictionary of the English Language, which corresponds with the etymology of the definition of education. The drawing out. The drawing out, E means out. The drawing out of a person's innate talent. What does innate mean? That's born with. So they're not, there's not a modifiability going on. There's not a control factor going on. So this redefinition of education came about through the experimentation on rats and cats and other animals. So John Dewey in 1800, 95 at Chicago University. It's when he joined the staff. He was in a laboratory, and it was funded by the Rockefeller. Rockefeller funded this venture. So this redefinition of education, what is the motive behind that? Why would Rockefeller fund, put so much funding into this for laborers, to control laborers, to use the children, to mold the children to become factory workers, laborers? Let's go down here. The General Board of Education. The General Board of Education. John Isbert further writes, Isbert, John D. Rockefeller, Jr., is Director of Charity for the Rockefeller Foundation, Frederick T. Gates, set up the Southern Education Board, SEB, which was later incorporated into the General Education Board in 1913, settling in the motion that the deliberate dumbing down of America. The Country School of Tomorrow, Occasional Paper, Papers Number 1, General Education Board, New York, 1913, written by Frederick T. Gates, contained a section entitled "A Vision of the Remedy," in which he wrote the following: "Is there aught of remedy for this neglect of royal life? Let us at least yield ourselves to the gratification of a beautiful dream that there is, in our dream, we have limitless resources, and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hand. The present educational conventions fade from our minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive royal folk. We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers or men of learning or of science. We are not to raise up from authors, orators, poets, or men of letters. We shall not search for embryo great artists, painters, musicians, nor will we cherish even the humbler ambition to raise up from among them lawyers, doctors, preachers, politicians, statesmen, of whom we now have ample supply. Factory workers." So this was targeted. This was focused. Molding. First, we have to have the definition. Guided by the definition. Reshaping the definition. So, and then by reshaping the definition, there's a reshaping of policy, public policy. A reshaping of how teachers are trained. That definition of the redefinition of education guided how teachers are trained, policy for generations, even to today. So this gives a great insight to the importance of etymology, to restoring the original meaning of the word, to get back, to restore the minds of the people, because they're being guided, being molded, they're being shaped to be controlled and manipulated, to be used as commodities. So this is very important. And so this class is structured to get people to think. There'll be methodologies that'll be taught. Mm-hmm. Tremendous classroom discussion. So methodology of how words are reconstructed, comparative method, critical analysis, seeing how words are reshaped, methodologies of how words acquire new meaning, generalization, specification, transfer meanings, methodology of how to read a dictionary, understanding the entry-level meanings and analyzing the various entry-level meanings. The entry-level meanings are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so forth. They're called entry levels. And those various entry-level meanings come about through various different times, time periods. For example, an entry-level meaning for education would be the 1934 definition that's been used to control people. So these are how these various entry-level meanings come about, politics. And so there's a constant reshaping of definition. Charlie Rose said on the Charlie Rose Show, where they're talking about that issue of the Cuban Iliad case in 2007. And I was at Hampton, Virginia, Sunday, watching the Charlie Rose Show. And he said, during the course of the show, whoever defines the language controls the issue. That's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not, so by defining the language, defining or redefining education, that means you control the issue, you control the discussion. Because now you're shaping the jurisdiction, so that means the discussion stays within this realm. The discussion stays within the realm of the redefinition of education. The policies are shaped based on the redefinition of education. And nothing else is allowed to come into this jurisdiction. We have the power to speak.
They showed that in Roots when they had the guy, he couldn't speak his own language. He had to, you know, when they changed his name and things like that.
Uthen Kente? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's how they, and they used it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And so this is, and you begin to see over the, and you'll learn that over the period of time, definitions are being reshaped. This is designed to get us to think why, not merely looking at it being reshaped, new things are being developed, but why are they being developed? See, that's more important. It's more important to know why, not that it is. That it is, you just follow and get along. Follow that it is. What's the motive? That's more important. What's the motive of, and what is the out goal? What are their outcomes more important? So this is knowing how to think, the power to reason, and not just accepting. And we accept because we don't know. We're not given,
right,
you know, the full, the map, the scope. We don't know who we are as a people. You have a question, Sister Bev?
No, and they're using repetition, you know, just like if you listen to the news, like people that listen to the news every day, and, you know, they repeat the same thing. You know how they say if you tell a lie long enough, you'll start believing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But if you know, then you won't believe the lie. They could say it 100 times, and it won't affect you.
Absolutely, because absolutely, that's right. Absolutely. Now let's look at you don't believe the lie, and the believing of the lies, as you mentioned, as you alluded to, is that you have no reference to the truth, mm-hmm. and so that's all you know. All you know is what's being fed to you. There's nothing. There's no comparative. Right. There's nothing to contrast. You know, all you know is the redefinition of education. And so you think that's all it is. You've never been given right. the etymology of words. And then oftentimes, I remember, you know, working in schools, Kansas City public schools, and teachers would say to me in responding about etymology and how students and how invaluable to teach students etymology. Well, what are they going to do with that? You know, how are they going to pass the SATs? How are they going to pass the SATs if they just know the etymology? So that's not one of, you know, and so they would go there, you know, they would go there to mm-hmm. take and test and to try to say that it's a waste of time, Mr. Bay. It's a waste of time teaching the students etymology. What are they going to do with that, Mr. Bay? How are they going to get a job with that, Mr. Bay? How are they going to pass SATs, Mr. Bay? That's not going to be, you know, one of the selections. So the key, so that is because we as a people, those who are more classified as black, nigga, colored, Latino, Spanish, Puerto Rican, Indian, West Indian, are not in control. We're not in control of our own destiny. Because they're once again, how are they going to get a job with that? See?
Mm-hmm.
See, so we're not in control of our own destiny. What are they going to do with that? I recall one of the guidance counselors, I had my logic book, and it was in the teacher's lounge, a guidance counselor, more classified as black. And she said, you know, as an attack on me, you know, logic, what are students going to get a job? What are students going to do with that? They need to be focused on getting a job. So low expectations. Once again, low expectations. And I get it. Looking at without mm-hmm. running stuff. I get it. I understand. I understand it. I understand the low expectations because we don't control trade and commerce. We don't control international trade and commerce. We don't control the economy. Thank you. You know, so they looking at that. And I get it. That's
why
there you go.
That?
Because we don't know who we are as our people, our name, our nationality, our history, our culture, our folkways, our land, our birthright. That's why it's that. So that's the job. And I understand why we think that. Based on our not we are, based on our not being in control, I can see that. Because after all, you know, you got to get a job. You know, that's the mold.
They can get a robot mm-hmm. to do a job.
Yes, well, they've done that. Machines to do a job. They've done that. So one,
so that makes
the key,
you obsolete. Go ahead.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you almost finish your points, Mr.
No, I was just making a comment. That's all.
Yes, knowing who we are, that we're Moors, and building, facilitating a national political structure, not just knowing who we are, because knowing leads to facilitating a national government structure. Reconnecting with the treaty nations, reentering the international community as an old and original state. Very key. Regaining control, enforcing the act of 1906, where they're obligated to help us set up the military, banking. So these are international. These are treaties and international agreements that we can afford as in government structure. Because now I'm getting into how to get back. Leading to why we think that etymology is not important. This is all tying to that. Why? Because they don't see us being in control or leading to that. So we're just relegated to getting a job. We go to school to get a job. All right, so someone says, well, I asked somebody, well, why do you need to go to school? I said, what do you mean? I need to go to school to earn a living. That's a wrong answer. That's a wrong answer. I need a job to earn a living. That's the wrong answer. The reason why you need a job, because our birthright has been stolen, period. That's the answer. You don't need a job to earn a living. You need a job because your birthright has been stolen. Because if we have control of our birthright, you wouldn't need a job. That's why you need a job, not to earn a living, because our birthright has been stolen. For over 400 years, Sister Beth, Spain, Portugal, Great Britain, the Netherlands, France have had colonial occupation of our Moorish land. And the United States is the agent of them all. So that's why you need a job. It has nothing to do with earning a living. It has all to do with that land is under occupation. And France, England, Spain, Portugal have control of our land and resources and still are using feudal law and using us as sureties, commodities, futures. This is all tied into words. That's just about it.
So, okay, this is like if you were conquered, just like you was in the fight, okay, so these people won, and just say that they put you in prison, and the only way you can, and this could be a mental prison, and the only way you could get out, because they're not going to let you out, you have to break out. So you're saying through the understanding of the language, that's the weapon to know how to use that and different things to get out of that mental prison or what they took from you to get back to get it, because they're not going to give it back.
All right. The etymology is a tool to restore the mind, to restore the mind to our ancient principles, philosophy, our well-settled principles. Etymology is a tool for proper analysis. Etymology is a tool to understand the motives behind the reconstruction or redefinition of words. The key is to facilitate a national government structure and to reestablish diplomatic relations with the treaty nations, Great Britain, France, the Netherlands, Portugal, England. And to re-enter as a national, Moorish national governing body, to re-enter the international community as an original and old state. I hear you, Sister Bev, they're not going to give it back. I've heard that over 1,000 times.
Do they honor treaties?
Yes. Let me give you an example. Society versus New Haven. Society versus New Haven, 1823 case. There's the treaty between Great Britain and United States, 1783 Treaty of Paris. And in that treaty, it protects any British, those loyalists who fought on the side of Great Britain against the United States, to recoup any debts that were, you know, made before the war. That was one of Society versus New Haven, as well as Ware versus Hilton. It was in 1795. And these are two major cases that deal with, you know, the pre-revolutionary treaties were still in force. That the Revolutionary War did not extinguish obligations prior to the war. You have in 18, Haldenstein versus Linham. Haldenstein versus Linham, Solomon Haldenstein, he had purchased three properties in the British realm where Virginia operates on more soil. He had been a resident of Virginia for years. When he transitioned, his relatives sued for the proceeds because Virginia had sold his three properties. The treaty between the 1850 treaty between the Swiss Confederation and the United States protected Haldenstein, allowed Haldenstein's relative to recoup the proceeds from the sale. Why did that treaty apply to Haldenstein? Because Solomon Haldenstein had never renounced his allegiance to Switzerland. He didn't come through immigration. He didn't naturalize as a United States citizen. He was still a Swiss citizen. So therefore, he was protected by that treaty.
So he was not in their jurisdiction.
Yeah, absolutely. So the key with our Sister Bev, let's look at this, because it's to empower us to our national unity. Our national unity. What is the key? Not only knowledge, but knowledge as an organized governing body, constitution. Understanding a permanent population of people, a national assembly of people. So that's very important. Now you have the convention, the Montevideo Convention. The Montevideo Convention outlines four principles of statehood. The main principle is a permanent population. Another principle is a defined territory. So that is making a map of a territory where you're governed. This is done through political structure. So it's very, very important that we come to understand political structure. Any questions before I go on?
No, if anybody in the audience have any questions, raise your hand. You can push, the number is 323-641-1586, and you know to push one. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I hear you, and your point is duly noted about they're not going to give it back. I don't take that. I don't want to push that. You know.
Okay.
Because no, let's analyze that. Because in fact, you didn't finish it. Because the finishing is they're not going to do that out of fight. That's the finishing. That's finishing. I've heard that over a thousand times.
Yeah,
let me tell you why you don't want to push that.
Right.
Just get me, hear me out. Just hear me out. The reason why you don't want to push that, they're not going to give it back without a fight. What our people are not in a position militarily.
Right.
So if you push that, they're not going to give it back without a fight. Position is to educate
to
our
fight.
People and organize them into government structure and reconnect us, re-enter the international community as an old and original state. Realign ourselves with the international community and with a knowledge, reestablish diplomacy with the treaty states as an organized governing body, do it through diplomatic channel. I've heard that, and I caution those who listen to you. You have COINTELPRO. There's COINTELPRO. They will put those that look like us among us. They're called operator, something. What's the word? Someone help me. Someone type in the word. Someone type in the word in the chat. When someone is placed, planted that look like us among us, and they will push a certain agenda. They're not gonna. You know, they don't grab without a fight. That's the only way you got to do it. They don't push the agenda. All right? There's
but
a term. That's a
it's
term.
More ways. Right. But when you, sometimes when people say that, they're not talking about picking up guns and things like that in fight. Just like you're talking about the etymology, you know, the words. It's other ways to fight. That's not talking about go to battle. With like military, other times when people say that, that's not what they're talking about. I mean, some do, but what you're doing, you're teaching the words. You can fight with that.
Can I tell you why I think they're talking about guns? Because when I do talk diplomacy, they're responding to my talk of diplomacy. It's like they're not they don't initiate the conversation like that way. They're responding to my diplomacy talk. That they're responding to this a peaceful diplomatic way of doing it. They're responding to they're not going to give it up without a fight. They're responding to that. So if I'm talking a peaceful resolution through diplomatic channels, through establishing government structure, when I'm talking that channel and someone says they're not going to give up without a fight, because it's only, all right, it's peaceful and opposite of peaceful is what? So the opposite of peaceful, if I'm talking peaceful and the opposite of peaceful
it's
is
war.
What?
War.
Well, that's
why they got two flags, the peace flag and the war flag.
So that's what I'm saying. That's what that's what they mean.
So when you hear that,
they can only mean that. Based on what I'm saying, peaceful, that can only mean that I should be, that we should, that we should, that I should, that I should direct my people, that I should direct my people that way. I will not do that. I will not do that. I will not. Dr. King said, I led my people into a burning house. I will not lead my people into a burning house.
So you say,
I will not get angry. I will not
make
that. That is not productive. Thanks, Sister Beth.
Okay. So you saying organize and approach that situation as a government. Just like you got Iran, you got Israel, you got Africa. So you want to approach them. And so where is it like a government within a government? Like, I mean, because the United States is a corporation on this land. So are you saying become a corporation? Because all those people are corporations. So you saying become a corporation and come in line with the other corporations?
What I was saying is to exert our pre-existing sovereignty. Let me explain what that means. Our pre-existing sovereignty. In 1952, the 1952 case between France and Great Britain and United States, there were three cases that was used to adjudicate, three types of treaties that was used to adjudicate that case. Between France and United States. France in 1950 brought forth the claim, sued the United States in international court for the right, because France claimed that they had the right, they had the most favorable nation clause right. So they brought the case to the International Court of Justice in 1950. The International Court of Justice used three types of treaties to adjudicate that case. The primary type of treaty that was used to adjudicate that case was the bilateral treaties between Morocco and 10 European powers from 1631 to 1891. The second type of treaty that was used to adjudicate that case is the Act of Algiers of 1906. It's called the Conference, Algiers Conference, 1906, and the Act to Protect Morocco, 1880. The third type of treaty was the Fez Treaty of 1912. So you're talking about a pre-existing obligation, a pre-existing relationship, Morocco and France, Morocco and Netherlands, Morocco and Sardinia, Morocco and United States, Morocco and Belgium, Morocco and Great Britain. So these are pre-existing relationships going back to the 1600 and beyond, prior to that. Pre-existing obligations is to restore. So it's called reversion to sovereignty. Reversion to sovereignty, whereby we will be entered by exerting a pre-existing sovereignty, the same sovereignty that the Beys, the Deys, the emperors of Morocco, the kings, the caliphs, the emirs exercised in Phoenicia in 700s, 800s, 900s, 1000s, 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, 1400s, the same Moorish sovereignty that we exercise in modern-day India in 700, 800, 1000. 1100, 1200 is to exert and exercise that pre-existing sovereignty in an national organized governing body and re-enter the international community as an under reversion to sovereignty as original and old state. We have to make that claim, and we have to we And as a permanent population, come to recognize that pre-existing sovereign power. Push that. To push a non-peaceful way to a people who are not militarily organized. Most of our people are dumbed down. Would be reckless.
Well, most of America is dumbed down.
Would be reckless.
From what? From what you see what's going on today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right? So this ties into the course, understanding the motive of the reconstruction, the redefinition of words, of burying the history that I just talked about, the treaty obligations that I talked about, the construction of the race paradigm with Francois Bernard, Carl Linnaeus, Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, Francois Bernard, who was a craniologist in the 1500s. Carl Linnaeus, a naturalist in the 1600s. Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, a German anthropologist. Francois Bernard lived in modern-day India for 9 years. He studied the race, the caste system in modern-day India. These are the fathers of the modern-day race paradigm. They constructed a definition, a race. They used four classifications based on phenotype, brain size, complexion, and hair texture. We're familiar with the complexion. This was shaped and molded by the fathers of the modern-day race paradigm. Once again, we have definition. These men are ruling from the grave. From the grave, they rule. Their race paradigm construct reigns in people's minds by the millions worldwide. From the grave, they rule. From the grave. You see the power? So we definitely went out the subject, tying it in. We're tying it in because it's about reconstruction of definition. To suppress well-settled principles, pre-existing obligations, the nationality of the Moors, and reconstructing a race paradigm. Black, Negro, colored, and supplanting the nationality concept and principles. Definition. Do we have any questions in the chat?
Yes, we do. Hold on a minute. Let's see. It's 773-895.
All right. Peace and love, y'all. How y'all doing tonight?
Peace and love. Good.
Yeah, this is Brother Derek from Chicago.
Hey, Derek.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, wow. I'm just all over the place. I'm vibing what you were saying tonight, brother. And it was interesting you had brought up John D. Rockefeller in the University of Chicago. Ironically, the first, I don't know if you're familiar with the name, well, you're probably familiar with the name William Rainey Harper. He was the first president of the University of Chicago, and that was the high school I had went to here, and they just closed it down last month, and all that right. was one of four or five high schools in this area where I live at. They're all gone now, and the neighborhood is not even considered black anymore. It's Mexican or Hispanic now. And,
it never was black. It never the neighborhood never was black. Never and it's not and mm-hmm. it's not Hispanic and Mexican today. It never was black and it's not Mexican and Hispanic today. Let me explain that.
Now, with that being said, what would you call it? In terms of the people that's inhabiting the neighborhood now.
They're Moors. Moors. It was Moors classified as black, and is now Moors classified as Mexican and Hispanic. The same people.
Okay.
Same people. All right. So the same people of same consanguinity are still there. The people of the same consanguinity are there. So they didn't move. And you have one body of Moors that left, and another body of Moors moved in. Same consanguinity. This is very important. But once again, language. In 1563, under the Inquisition against the Moors, now called, once again, Reconstruction, Spanish Inquisition. So even the Inquisition against the Moors had been reclassified as the Spanish Inquisition. Once again, language. In 1563, Philip II, King of Spain, issued a bulla. A bulla subjugated the Moors under Spanish rule. He classified the Moors as Spanish, forbade the Moors from wearing their culture headsets, turban and fezes, forbade the Moors from speaking their language, Arabic. The children were taken away from the parents and educated, were taught Latin by the priesthood. They're Moors. They're not. All right. You have the consanguinity nationality, Moor, and you have the political nationality. The political nationalities of the Moors are Argentinian, Peruvian, Colombian, Mexican, Nicaraguan, El Salvadorian, etc. Those are Dominican. Those are the political nationalities of the Moors. They're not the consanguinity nationality of the Moors. Let me further explain. In 13 coat of arms of those Central and South American countries, there's a Moors fez and a pyramid. That's a national coat of arms. The national coat of arms. So the Moorish prince identity is preserved in the national coat of arms of those nations. They're not Argentinians, they're not Colombians, they're not Nicaraguans, they're not Peruvians, they're not Dominicans, they're not Mexicans, they are Moors. So you have...
So are we seeing a reconstruction with the thousands of the people coming over the border? Is that a form
You just
of
took the words right out of my mouth, Bev, because I was going to try to connect, tie what the brother was saying in terms of the sanctuary. Because where I'm at now is a sanctuary state. So how does that connect? So it's like, but you just basically asked the brother my question. I just want to know how that tied in with these so-called the term sanctuary city or sanctuary state.
You said coming over the borders. All right.
Yeah, all of the people, the names that you name are those people that's coming over the borders now, and it's thousands and thousands of them. So is that some form of reconstruction?
All right. Let me explain. We have to put it in the proper context. Let's put this in proper context. What you're calling borders are British zones. Once again, for 500 years, Spain, Portugal, Great Britain, France, and the Netherlands have colonized Morocco. That extends what they call from North America, Central America, South America, and the Jordan Islands. That is the Moroccan Empire, and expanding up to even Phoenicia area, up to modern-day India, North Africa, part of West Africa today, that's the Moroccan Empire. The Moroccan Empire, the sun never sets. The sun never sets on the Moroccan Empire. The sun never sets on the Moroccan Empire because the Moroccan Empire is bad. It's very important to understand that. We have to put this in the proper context. So what you call borders, you have what's called land cession treaties. Land cession treaties between Spain and France and Portugal and the Netherlands. You know, so these land cession treaties, the land cession treaties create, they created borders and boundaries that's in the language of these land cession treaties. One of the land cession treaties is the Treaty of Paris of 1763 between France and Great Britain. The Treaty of Paris between Great Britain and the United States, 1783. There's other land cession treaties among the various Spain, Portugal, Great Britain, Netherlands, and France. Those are land cession treaties creating political boundaries that's in the language. So when you see these maps, you know, these different maps in 1600s, 1650s, 1670s, all right, these different maps, those maps are based on the land cession treaties creating board boundaries. Those are artificial. So they're marking, creating Spanish zones, Portuguese zones, French zones, Great British zones, Dutch zones on Moorish soil. That's what you're talking about. We have to put it in its proper context. You cannot, it's not proper to talk about that outside of this context. You got to place it in its proper context. That's the answer to your question, brother. I place in this proper context.
So you're saying there's no doors. They put the doors up. These
land cession
boundaries.
Treaties. Land cession treaties among the Spain, Portugal, Great Britain, France, Netherlands from in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, and that continue even to today. Absolutely. And classifying the people as Spanish and black, Negro, colored, Indian, West Indian. Absolutely. We have to talk about it in this context. Once again, whoever defines the language controls the issue. As long as we talk on the constructive language, constructive jurisdiction, constructive boundaries of language, or how to, because they're shaping how we discuss things. To maintain colonial control of our land and resources. As long as we don't go back to the well-settled ancient principles of our mothers and fathers, that's well-settled, we have to go back. Let's look at this again.
For an example, look at the UN. The UN is all them countries are sitting there. They all speak in different language. But
The UN was created by treaty. Not all those countries created the UN. They're not the original party. You had a few countries that were original parties, you know, to creating the UN through treaty. And other nations signed on, so they've got to keep that in mind. The UN preceded what preceded the UN was the League of Nations, and that was created through treaty. Versailles, by three or four European nations. So
Derek, you can stay on. We're gonna do a round table. I'm gonna open the line up again.
Okay.
We got another question. 347-205.
Hi again.
347.
Hi.
Yes.
Hey, how are you all? Yeah, I'll be brief because I know that a lot of people respect to all of you. A lot of religion and movements are forms of nationalism for former slave masters. So you have Rastafarianism, which has some great points, but it's basically Anglo-Christianity with the black Marcus Garvey, et cetera, to replace the white Jesus. You have Nation of Islam, which is Arabic, and in worship of what we call Saudi Arabia. Remember, Saudi Arabia is not the original Arabia that Muhammad was from. That was Arabia. The House of Saud took over Saudi Arabia and now manipulates Islam and its holy cities for profit. Hebrew Israelites have a similar issue where they don't realize that the original Hebrew people were black Africans in Kemet, Egypt. Akhenaten, King Tut's son, even Sigmund Freud said it. The Moors have some great insights. I've learned a lot from the Moors, but the problem is that not all of us can be Moors because genetically some of us are Yoruba, Ashanti, and Wolof, and some of us were in the Americas when we crossed the Bering Strait way before Islam and Christianity. So it's impossible for all of us to just take the title Hebrew Israelite or Moor in a legitimate legal position when we're actually, many of us, not that group. The Americans, the Anglos, did take a lot of Moorish power, but at this point it seems like the ship has sailed because Native Indians are not going to get their land back, and Moors are not going to, unfortunately, the ones that can prove they're Moors, get the legal rights. I have Moorish friends, and they can't go on the highway and say, yo, bro, I'm a Moor, I'm going to run that red light. The cops pull them over, and I've seen it happen. So we have to put the reality in perspective and say that if we're Africans, we shouldn't be worshiping Israel, well, the white Israel, nor Saudi Arabia. We should be worshiping Africa. And anything African, black folks or brown folks or Moorish folks, don't do that. They're still our family, but they're nationals for Saudi Arabia or nationals for white Israel, not nationals for our freedom. That's why people encourage us to talk Arabic instead of an African language, or encourage us to talk the white Jewish version of Hebrew as opposed to the Kemetic version. But we're still, we all family, and I thank you all so much for the time. I appreciate and love you all. Ashe Hotep Amanla.
Let me respond.
Hotep.
The brother spoke constructive language. He spoke constructive language. He said, let's talk reality.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke construct. He spoke the language. He spoke Carl Linnaeus. Once again, Francois Bonnaire, Carl Linnaeus, and Johann Blumenbach. It's raining from the grave. The language that he spoke was created by the fathers of the race paradigm. They created the paradigm white, black, red, brown, and yellow. So to say black and white people, that is Carl Linnaeus, Francois Bonnaire, Johann Sven Rubach paradigm that have been used to suppress our people, to steal our birthright. Hold on, brother. You mentioned black and white. You use constructive language in your speech, black and white.
Just like you're using English language. It's just language to communicate a thought process. You're getting caught on semantics as opposed to intelligent discourse, my friend.
All right. No, hold on, brother. You say I'm getting caught on semantics. That's for those who don't know what semantics means. Because you just threw the word, I'm getting caught on semantics. Semantics is the science of meaning. What a semanticist would do, I talked about what this course is about. Part two of this course, Getting to the Roots, 201, deals with the science of meaning, of how words gain new meanings. So a semanticist would do in a 100-year time period will look at how words, in particular words, gain new meanings. In the dictionary, you have what's called entry-level meanings. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's semantics. Those are words. Once again, you have, I gave the redefinition of etymology, of education. That's semantics. You have that. So an etymologist deals with the history, origin, true meaning of words, and how words, you know, dealing with the variant forms, cognates. A semanticist does not deal with the history, origin, and true meaning of words. They deal with the development of new meanings. So you see, I get caught up with semantics. Black and white are not nationality. And my coworker, former coworker years ago, we were in the teacher's lounge, and I was talking about principles of nationality, and I was saying that people are not identified by shades and colors, black, white, color, you know, blue, green, yellow. And my coworker at the time, who went to law school when she didn't pass the bar, this is an elementary school teacher, and she said that that's not the real world. I said, well, yes, nationality is the real world. Chinese, China. German, Germany. France, French. She stopped speaking to me. Remember, I wasn't talking only to her. I was talking to 4, 8, and 9 teachers. And she interjected by saying, nationality is not the real world. It took me years to understand why she said nationality is not the real world. Because she, like many people, she'd been indoctrinated with the Carl Linnaeus, Francois Bonnet, Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, race, birthright stealing, dehumanizing, race paradigm, black, white, red, brown, and yellow. It took me years, all right. As a teacher, she has to classify her students. Black, how many blacks she got in the classroom? How many whites you got? How many Hispanics, you know, and got in the classroom? At jobs, hospitals, she sees black, synthesis. So that's why I said, I remember being in the fifth grade class, and someone from the Rutgers University International Department came as a guest speaker. International and Public Relations Department. International, I'm doing this for a reason. International and Public Relations Department came to speak to fifth grade class. I was at the back of the room at the door, standing. I'll never forget this. He said to the fifth grade students, it doesn't matter what color you are, black, red, purple, orange, or green. Once again, from the International and Public Relations Department. Spoke to a fifth grade class and used that. So was he dealing with semantics? No, he was dealing with the Francois Bonnet, Carl Linnaeus, and Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, the humanizing birthright stealing paradigm.
Well, some people call themselves nationalists, and, you know, you have the internationalists. What is that? Can you go on that?
All right.
But Bev,
emphasized 4 or 5 times the department he was from. I don't want to overlook
the international.
He was from International Public Relations Department. He was speaking like that. He was saying it doesn't matter what color you are, black, white, red, purple, orange, or green. He said purple. He included purple, orange, or green. Let's emphasize that. Why would someone from the International Public Relations Department at a university speak like that to a fifth grade class?
Black,
white,
the color.
Red, purple, mm-hmm. orange, or green. Because I've heard people conclude purple, red, orange, or green. I've heard many people say that.
Yeah, I have too.
Remember, he's not from off the street. We're not somebody from off the street. He's from, that's why I said it 4 or 5 times. because I was making a point. I said it four or five times to emphasis, because where he's from is the main point. Not, he didn't come from off the street. He didn't come from the math department. He didn't come from the biology department. He came from the international and public relations department. Which means he deals with issues of nationality.
We're talking about international. We're talking about global, off the planet, universal.
Yeah.
In terms of those different colors, when you talk about purple, that's the thing that came to my mind when you said that.
No. I'm emphasizing the department because he deals with nationality, nations all the time. He's in that department. He's in the International Public Affairs Department that deals with these issues of nationality, nations, trade and commerce. That's what the point I'm making. And why would he interject a false premise, a false concept, a birthright stealing concept to fifth grade students as a guest speaker?
Let me ask you. You got another caller, Bev?
No, go ahead.
I was just asking.
Another call, Sister Bev. So we want to be fair with this. You want to be fair, Sister Bev. Open up to other
right.
callers. You got other people listening.
Okay.
Say
a question you asked when we finish here. 213-839.
Good evening. Good night.
Hello.
Buenas noches.
Oh.
Can you hear me, Bear?
Hello, Eric. Yes, better love. We hear you.
Hello. All right, better love, Derek. And all right. Brother Abdullah, good to have you back.
Abdullah, as usual.
Islam, brother. Buenas noches. And I have a two-part question. I know you can handle it. And my first question is, what was it about Cook County, Chicago, that Noble Jirali took his document to that particular area in the Morris regime? And the second question is, can you expound on the double cross that they call the Lorraine?
The double cross. All right, let me address the first one. Now,
yes.
your question is about why did he take it to Cook County, you know, and why not another county? I mean, that would get. I'm coming to you
yes.
say, oh, why that? Why not another county? Why Cook County? Is
yes.
that what you're asking me? Why Cook County and not another county? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes. Yes.
All right. I don't know why he. He was at the he took it to Cook County because that was where, remember, he said the old Canaanite temple. It was actually because he didn't set up the old Canaanite temple. So that's one. He did not set up the old Canaanite temple. The Canaanite temple was set up by Muhammad. Somebody type in the chat to get his name. The Canaanite temple was set up by Muhammad, and that was in Newark, New Jersey. And Jirali added the word new to it. So Jirali added the word new to Old Canaanite Temple. So they're going to put that on the record that Jirali did not establish the because the old Canaanite Temple was already, you know, established. So that was in North New Jersey, all right, prior to Newark Jirali. Now at the time that Jirali filed the Articles of Incorporation, he was in Chicago, Illinois. So that's why. So that's why there. He filed Articles of Incorporation under the laws of Illinois. So he filed Articles of Incorporation in a foreign jurisdiction under the laws of Illinois. That's there, and that to propagate the faith of Mohammedanism. That's what's on Articles of Incorporation. So that's That's why he did that, because they were at Chicago. They were in the, you know, the in Moorish territory, in the British zone, where Illinois operates on Moorish soil. All right, brother. The double cross you're asking about? You asked about the double cross?
Yeah.
All right. So the double cross, you see the double cross in the British flag. The double cross is the union of the tropical cross, which is the earth cross that deals with the four seasons, and you have the galactic cross. So when the galactic cross, the celestial equator of the tropical cross, intersects the galactic equator, that is done every 12,500 years. That forms the union of those two crosses, thereby forming the double cross that you see. That knowledge is preserved in that British flag. You have another question?
Wow. Just to end up on that, and then they use that same double cross knowledge to place Martin Luther King at the Lorraine Motel and do what they did to him in a ritual. And so, you know, these insights, that's why I ask these questions, because, you know, it's insight that leads to other bigger things. And so, you know, by us defining these things, you know, what the terminology and the symbols, you know, we can figure out, you know, it helps us navigate a little bit better. So thank you very much for those answers.
You're welcome.
Brother, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Abdul.
Any other questions in the chat?
So far, that's the only hands. And we still,
all right,
Eric
going all right.
And Derek is now, wait, before you move on, Derek, what question did you want to ask?
Well, I'm trying to bring everything back forward to what's going on right now, especially we had some interesting events that actually happened this afternoon. In St. Louis County, the mask mandate was reinstituted indoors. And in L.A. County, they've already started to close down restaurants again, because of this quote-unquote COVID situation.
Yeah.
So with that being said, as far as learning the language and everything, the proper language to speak whatever, how is that going to stop these mandates and these lockdowns that's happening?
All right. Were you on earlier, brother? How long have you only been on, like 15, 20 minutes?
No, I'm doing a round table, so I'm not.
About that, how long has he been on? Because he asked me about just the language, and I just didn't talk just about language. I was talking about facilitating, organizing in the government structure, which is already being done. The Promotion Pure Restoration Caucus is facilitating the national unity of a national governing structure. So I didn't just talk about the language. I talk about, you know, once again, we have the Academy of Providence. I am co-founder, along with Tamara Hill, of the Academy of Providence, which is a university.
Okay, I didn't hear all that part early. I came in a little bit late.
That's what I was exactly. That's why I asked you, because that's what I asked you. How long you been on? 10, 15 minutes. All right. So that because if you were on earlier, you would have never asked me that question. That's what I'm saying. You would already know.
Well, now with that being said,
go ahead. Okay.
We're on a global lockdown right now, whether people want to admit it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what you're saying, bro, about the language and everything. How do we stop it?
All
because
right.
I'm just going to be honest with you, respectfully honest with you right now, where I'm at right now here in Chicago, what we just talked about earlier, a lot of the brothers and sisters, don't want to hear what you're saying right now. They don't want to learn anything. They're living off this energy of fear. They don't want to hear nothing else about freedom, sovereignty.
All right.
People All right. are divided,
you're
separated.
For some of this, though. So you're speaking for everybody. Brother.
Well, I'm not speaking for everybody. I'm just explaining what I'm seeing right now here.
How many people in Chicago, brother? I gotta deal with logic. I gotta deal with logic. How many people in Chicago? 3 million.
Okay, misdirect my question.
I'm not, brother. I'm not. I'm dealing with logic. You said.
Well, speaking of logic, people are now using logic right now anyway.
Brother,
go ahead.
Please, brother.
I'm just trying to come up with some solutions
Please, brother. The brothers and sisters do not want to hear nothing about nationality, sovereignty, freedom in Chicago. There's 3 million in Chicago. So that's why I asked you, are you speaking for everyone? There's the population in Chicago is 3 million. Are you speaking for everyone, all 3 million in Chicago?
No.
That's why I'm asking. So how can you make a statement that the brothers and sisters in Chicago do not want to hear enough about sovereignty, nationality, history, birthright? Have you spoken to 3 million? 10, 20, 30, 100 out of 3 million? That's what I'm
saying. You know what, brother? Let me say this. Because you got me on that one. With that being said, let me see how can I word this. If that particular subject matter,
speak for yourself.
I'm trying to, Bear, because it's like every time I try to say something, you throw something else in there, and it's now it's really messing up my thoughts here. I'm gonna put it to you like this, bro. Something needs to be done. I don't know what you want to call it, this thing about not wanting to learn or ignorance, whatever. It's not helping. So I'm at a loss for words right now, and it's not looking good.
Let me open up another line here. We're going to keep this round table going. 347-805.
Good evening. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can. Yes.
Peace to the family. Peace to the family. The brother, speaking, brother Derek, other brother who called in. You, of course, Bev.
Yes.
I run into this war a lot, right? If it's not the Pan-Africans, it's the Kemites, or it's the Moors. I live in Harlem. I got all of it represented here, unfortunately. Now, 1828 dictionary says a Moor is a native of the northern coast of Africa, called by the Romans for the color of the people, Mauritania, the country of dark complexion people. The same country is now called Morocco, Tunis, and Algiers. So these are your Moors. An American is a native of America, originally applied to aboriginals or Coptic colored races found here by the Europeans, but now applies to descendants of the Europeans born in America. The name America must always exalt pride in patriotism. That's the name of an American. Now it says it was applied to the aboriginals, the name of the definition, 1828 dictionary. And if you have earlier definitions, please, I doubt it. Aboriginal, first original primitive aboriginal people, the first inhabitants of a country. The description, aboriginal tribes of America. So we're back to America, aboriginals, copper colored people. Why are you here telling us that we're Moors?
All right.
If you
want
to
talk
to the Moors, go to Africa.
Let me ask a question. You only been on for 10, 15 minutes?
Well, first answer my question.
No, hold on, brother. I'm going to answer the question. I'm asking you. You only been on for 10, 15 minutes.
No, I've been on the whole show.
Also, that so
everything you said.
So, all right. So that means you heard me say, since you've been on the whole show, that the Moors ruled modern day India. There's a book titled medieval India under Muhammadan rule, 711 to 713. All right? 763. 711 to 763 by Stanley Pole. All right? Moors ruled for 1,500 years, for 800, 900 years plus modern-day Europe, which is Phoenicia. All right? That's also North Africa and West Africa. So we have the Moroccan Empire, the sun never set on the Moroccan Empire because the Moroccan Empire is vast. In Jay Rogers' book, what I didn't say this. In Jay Rogers' book, Nature Knows No Color Line, Chapter 6, The Negro as Moor in the Coat of Arms of European Families. He has over 100 coat of arms and family and crest in that book, that chapter, of Dark Isle of Moors, Wesley Snipes looking. Throughout Europe, you know, Germany, France, the Netherlands, and also has in that chapter 50 names that are derived from Moor, 50 European kin names, family names that are derived from Moor. What I also said, in 1563, Philip II issued a bull classifying the Moors as Spanish, forbidding the Moors to wear their culture, headdress, language, and took the children from the parents and forced them to speak Latin. I've also said there are 14 coat of arms of Central South America countries that preserve their Moorish heritage, pedigree, and their national coat of arms with a Moorish fez and a pyramid in that coat of arms. So I'm showing you documentary evidence.
Another
point of evidence, bro.
But you're talking about Europe, and I'm talking about America. The people that were found here by the Europeans, the first people to come here outside of the Americans, were copper-colored people, pretty much describing the black people here.
I didn't finish, brother.
Go ahead, bro.
I didn't finish, brother.
Go ahead.
The word blackamoor, which is a compound word, black plus more. Black's an adjective, more is a proper noun. That word is created, indicating that the Moors are now being classified as black. In North Central South Morocco, now called North Central South America, Barry Fell, in his book America Beast, I'm not done, brother.
I'm not done, brother.
You can't talk at the same time. We got to hear. We want to hear both sides. We got to talk one at a time.
But Bev,
can I interject for a moment?
I'm not done.
No, I want to say something to Tom.
Let him finish bullshitting around the question, man.
Go ahead.
Barry Fell, America BC, and a saga, America Saga, as other authors that chronicle that moss and Cyrillic script found on tablets. And Cyrillic script is related to Arabic script. The Moors spoke Arabic, wrote Arabic, library in Cordova, housed over 600,000 manuscripts. The name America has been reconstructed to the name America. You have M-O-R-O-C-C-O. When you add a initial sound or letter at the beginning of a word, that is called prosthesis. So that linguistical methodology, so there's a sound shift of from America, from Morocco to America. The six those countries, Morocco had wars with France, Spain, Portugal, the Netherlands during the 16th, 17th, 1800s. The same countries that had purported to transport our people from some continent Africa to North, Central, South America are the same countries, that's Portugal, France, Spain, Great Britain, and the Netherlands, all have treaties with Morocco. All Moors seized their ships. Moors seized them and held them in high ransom. There's a correlation there. Who are these people today? My book, Moors and Masonry, chronicles, has this evidence of the extensive diplomatic relations, wars, vast enslavement, capturing Europeans and held them in bondage. Those Spain, France, the Netherlands, and Great Britain all paid annual tribute to Morocco to pass the high seas. So you have this extensive diplomatic relations that Morocco had with Spain, Portugal, France, the Netherlands, and England during the 16th, 17th, 1800s. I rest.
Okay, all right, let's go to 323-207.
Islam, Moore.
223-207.
Islam, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hotel, ICB, hotel. Hotel, peace, family. Islam,
hotel.
Noble. Are you there, OG?
He
Brother
should
Abdullah.
Be here.
I'm here.
Abdullah?
Oh,
I'm here.
Islam, Noble, I just want to greet you in peace and give all praise to Allah
Islam.
Your work that you're doing, man.
Islam, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting, got my three goddesses here with me. We just listening to the build, you know. So bear with me. I didn't want to be on here too long, but I'm definitely trying to have them soak up the culture, you know, that's what's hitting. And I greatly do appreciate the work, man. I'm looking forward to getting that autographed copy. And, you know, like the prophet said, we hard head, stiff-necked people. I wish I could be with you longer, brother, but I greatly do appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
Yo. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Okay.
I appreciate
you
coming on.
Okay.
I appreciate you coming on to the podcast, OG.
Thank you, brother.
Peace, family.
Okay. Peace. Okay. Let's go to 302-438.
Peace and greetings, everyone. Can you hear me? Peace and greetings,
peace and
everyone.
Greetings. Better love. Yes.
This is Tamara L. I would like to first thank you, Beverly, for being a conductor of knowledge that would need to go out, whether it's going out to our people who are unconscious to the information that is buried in the sand, buried in the clay, buried in the dust, and that is being revealed. I would like to thank Brother Abdullah for his 30 years of digging in the clay, digging in the dirt, digging in the mud to unearth the information that we so severely need. We have been under over 250 years of well-settled oppression, usurpation of our land. And we have to keep in mind that the earth was formed with one bloodline. So whether we want to admit it or not, we all one and the same. We all one kinship that must rise up. from the oppression in which we created within ourselves, and that's another topic of a whole nother segment, you know, the creation of the hybrid race. So which is our kin as well. So there's a fight just amongst our own. There's a fight with amongst our own in the house. But there must be peace and there must be balance. And in order to do that, there must be erasion of the mind and the tongue in order to be restored to our cultural past. So, Brother Abdul, I want to thank you for the years of work and service that you're doing. And, a lot of time I listen to a lot of different podcasts and things of that nature. And even if it's in constructive tone, I still like to listen and take notes because you can always learn from anyone, whether you agree or disagree. You can always, if you take the time to get on someone's podcast, it's always in a betterment to just be respectable of the host of taking the time who want to bring forth. If you're in disagreement with that, be in disagreement with that and calm and leave in peace. And that's what I would do today. Once again, Brother Abdullah, thank you, and I leave in peace.
Thank you.
Thank you. Better love. Okay, Abdullah.
Yes. Thank you, Sister Bev. Thank you. How much more time we have?
We have about 12 minutes.
12 minutes. All right, good. Yeah, so this course, as you can see, we're going to be dealing with methodology. We're going to be dealing with the course is in two parts, the Getting to the Roots 201, in two parts. So we have dealing with the reconstruction of words, of the methodology, the labelization, dentalization, guttalization, you know, how words, dealing with sound shifts, how words change forms as a word. For example, pater in Latin is reconstructed to father in English. The P in Latin transliterates to the F in English. The TH and the T in pater, P-A-T-E-R, the T in pater transliterates to the TH in father. They are principles. So we're going to learn what the basic sound chart is, then with labelization, dentalization, guttalization, voice, non-voice, stop, non-stop, fricatives. And so we're going to learn the principles of sound shifts and the reconstruction. We're going to deal with comparative method. I dealt with comparative method. We're comparing two languages from two different family structures. So we have Latin, which is the Latin-based languages, and you have English, which is the dramatic languages. So that's going comparative method, pater to father. So dealing with that. Then we have semantic, so science of meaning, how words that they'll acquire new meanings over a period of centuries, and methodology dealing with that. I talked about the Roger's thesaurus. Roger's thesaurus and this classification system or synonyms. So let's look at that. Let's look at the classification of synonyms in Roger's thesaurus, and I'll give you a little taste of that. All right? So looking at here, we have the conceptual framework for words. That's the building vocabulary through the systematic study of synonyms. The semantical classification of synonyms in Roger's thesaurus provides the conceptual framework to learn the precise meaning of synonyms and to learn new synonyms, stimulates critical thinking about meanings of synonyms, promotes the strengthening of vocabulary skills, learn to use words according to their precise shades of meaning, analyzing words with the same semantic principles, connotation and shades of meanings. Roger developed the following six classifications: abstract relation, space, matter, intellect, volition, and affection. These classes are divided into categories, and the categories are further developed into subcategories. So now we have the general class of space, which is general concept, motion, which is a category of the classification space, which is more, you're getting specific concept. Then you have regression, which is a subcategory of motion, more specific. So what type of motion? So we have these various types of motion. And understanding, you know, this conceptual framework, in this case, of motion. We have precession, which is motion before. Sequence, motion afterwards. Progression, motion forwards, progressive motion. regression, motion backwards. Propulsion, motion given to an object situation situated in front. Traction, motion given to an object situation situated behind. Approach, motion towards. Recession, motion from. Attraction, motion towards actively. Repulsion, motion from actively. Convergence, motion nearer to. Diversion, motion further off. Arrival, terminal motion at. Departure, initial motion from. Ingress, motion into. Egress, motion out of. Reception, motion. So those,
okay.
These are, and there's more. Okay. So this is conceptual framework.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, that'll be part two of this course. So the course is breaking down seven weeks and breaking down to two parts. So I just wanted to give them a little taste of this upcoming course.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
familiar with the syntax? I'm trying to see if this something like, are you familiar with that? I forgot the guy's name, his first name.
David Wynn Miller. I'm familiar with it. I haven't really studied it just a bit. I cannot talk on it.
Okay. I'm just trying to see the concept. Like he used it. He used the syntax language to, you know, win a lot of contracts, bring down a lot of judges, and, you know, he was able to make some changes in the system by using syntax, that, you know, the wording in a different kind of way, the writing of the word. And that's what I was trying to see. Is this what this is for?
No.
You know, I'm trying to. Okay.
Because
I got one more quick question, brother, before we get off the air. I don't know how long you're going to be staying on.
We got six minutes.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Go ahead with your question.
No, just are you familiar with, I know a lot of people are into numerology. So how do you have you undertaken the study of numerology, or how does it relate to?
Briefly, not enough to talk on it, brother. I studied briefly what it was, brother. I had books on it, and then when I got into etymology, I dedicated, immersed myself, invested in grammar books, usage books, etymology books. I immersed myself into etymology, vocabulary building, grammar, dictionary study skills. All right, I was studying astrology. I was studying astrology after my first etymology course, and I decided, you know what, I'm just studying etymology and astrology. I said, you know what, I chose to stay with etymology. When you're trying to get something, you got to immerse yourself in it. You know, it was just too much,
right.
And I just dedicated myself into etymology. That includes grammar, vocabulary building, dictionary study skills, poetry.
With the etymology, is that helping to understand the treaties or the contracts or things like that?
Yes. Grammar, exactly. I have been teaching right now. We have a 12-week grammar course on clauses, noun clauses, adjective clauses, adverbial clauses, and older treaties, Sister Bev. They are long sentences.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Understanding the grammar, teaching grammar will help you understand the treaties, because we understand how to break down, analyze long sentences.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I know that how they keep us out is how they write their stuff, the meaning of their stuff. And if you kind of can understand it, it's kind of like breaking a code. You know, you can kind of understand what they're saying, and they say it in a different way. You know, I'm just from the little paperwork and the contracts that I've seen, you know, how you're able to break through the blockage that they have there on the paperwork with the contracts and things.
All right, let me explain what's going on. You have what's called originalist and constructionalist. I know exactly what you're talking about, so let me just provide for those who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
You have what's called originalist and constructionalist. You have etymology, that's originalist. You have constructionalist, that's semantic. So you have, once again, I was just talking about how words are being reshaped. So you have this constructionist where it's a moving away from well-settled principles. That's well-settled principles and definitions. Definitions must be fixed, immovable, and ascertainable. So when you have this what's called plain meaning approach, this constructive meaning approach, this common understanding approach, and that's what they're doing, Sister Bev. But it starts with that approach of constructionism. The people agreeing, all right, well, we're going to have this constructive constructionism where the meanings are not fixed. You know, the meanings are not fixed, and so it allows for great flexibility, elasticity. But a jurist will go that to that which is well settled. So the etymology of the word, it's well settled. That's the history, origin, and true meaning, which is well settled, whereby a constructive meaning cannot stand. So it's understanding. This will be taught in this class, Sister Bev.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And before we go, I have one more person that has their hands raised here. 843-610.
Greetings, better love. Greetings, Brother Abdallah.
Better love.
Greetings. Thank you. Greetings. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for all that you are and you do. I just kind of wanted to be a translator. What the earlier brothers were speaking to is the family is under attack again on another level with this COVID striving to get people to take these shots and get these chips and this toxic RNA injected into their bodies. So I believe part of their question was, is there anything in reference to what you're bringing to the table today, or do you have any information that could assist the family in not dealing with, you know, this corruption that's taking place? Because most of us are unconscious of what to do.
I address that through the Moors of Pure Restoration Caucus, UnitedRepublicOfMorocco.com. Go to UnitedRepublicOfMorocco.com and go, that's the website. Moors of Pure Restoration Caucus. I address what the Moors of Pure Restoration Caucus is doing, facilitating a national governing structure. We reestablish diplomacy with the treaty nation. I address that. We're entering on the reversion to sovereignty. So I address that. That is the plan of action. So I understood that, and I did address it. I did address that in kind.
All right, I appreciate
all right.
you. Thank
well,
you.
Oh, you. Thank you.
Head to poop.
Okay,
better
thank
love.
You. Thank
better
you,
love.
Eddie. Yes, better love. Okay, tell people again, when is your class and what time?
Yeah,
how can they get to it tomorrow?
Absolutely. Tomorrow the class begins, Getting to the Roots 201. It's from 12:30 p.m. 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's from July 24th, which is tomorrow, to September 4th. And it's 7 weeks. It's Zoom. It's also in class as well as Zoom. And all the classes are recorded. So if you can't take it on a Saturday, you can watch it during the course of the week. All right. Then you go to UnitedRepublicOfMorocco.com, UnitedRepublicOfMorocco.com, and click on Academy of Providence to enroll. So enroll now. Registration will remain open. So you can register after tomorrow. You can register tonight, tomorrow, and after tomorrow. The registration will remain open. Let me see if we have a
new
system.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Abdallah. Thank you for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Better love. Thank you. Thank you, family,
thank you
for listening. I will. Okay. Better love. We will be back Monday or Tuesday. So y'all know how Dr. Robert X is. So if we're not here Monday, we definitely will be here Tuesday. So my Ahotep and better love.
Yes, I, Rastafari, I love you. Jah make the blind man see. Jump up and feel airy. He make the lame man walk. Make all the dumb start talk. That they may all be one, as though have a heart in eye, an eye in the eye. That they may all be one in eye and eye. That the world may know and believe that thou hast sent I. And the glory which thou gavest unto I and I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I and them, and thou in the eye. That they may be made perfect in oneness, and that the world may know that thou hast sent I, and hast loved them, even as thou hast loved the eye.
Ready or not, you're gonna get a shot of this really red hot black African love. Step on the scene, hand them out pure and clean. I pose and wheel black African love. Ready or not, you're gonna get a shot of this really red hot black African love. Don't be so mean, your love is pure and clean. Oh Lord,
it make me sick. Get well, redeem the wicked from hell, but make a deaf man ear, I'll make the careless start kill, oh Lord, baby.
Come now, all people, let's gather near, and listen well clear, hear the words of I and I, Rasta man, I've come to sing to you. In a distant time, the truth must prevail. World is leaping and a wailing to your national peace. Them gonna end, and that will come on you, and you, and you too. So, if you're ready or not, gonna get a shot of this good red hot
black African love.
Dead upon the sea, but don't be so mean. I go and green and
black African love.
Come to the beat, get away from the beat, let's face to the east,
black African love.
Don't be so mean, keep your hands and heart pure and clean.
It make the blind man see, jump up and feel airy. Come make the lame man walk, make all the dumb start talk. As the Father has loved I and I, so I have loved the I. Continue ye in Jah love. And if you keep the I commandments, you shall abide in Jah love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his law. These things have I spoken unto you, that I and I joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be made full. For this is I and I commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. For greater love has no man that he should lay down his life even for his friends.